One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Did you know that most women are actually pregnant for 10 months? Yeah? I don't know where this 9-month myth came from, but if you give birth at 9 months, i.e. 36 weeks, your baby is medically preterm, aka premature. A full-term pregnancy is 40 weeks, which is 10 months, and I only realised I had been scammed in this way at the start of my third trimester, which was basically too late to do anything about it. But after those incredible 10 months of growing a human from scratch comes the fourth trimester. This is the period immediately after birth where everyone, including baby, is adjusting to everything new. Technically, a trimester is meant to last 3 months or so, but let's just say that for parents, this adjustment period can go on for much longer. Welcome to episode 6 of Black Ballad Presents The Survival Guide, a podcast about surviving and thriving through motherhood from the perspective of black mums in Britain. I'm Jen Della Benson, head of editorial at Black Ballad, and this episode we're talking about the fourth trimester. From the outside, pregnancy and early motherhood can seem like this amazing journey filled... Actually, wait, let's not generalize, because not all of us feel this way.
I always saw pregnancy. It was never really cute to me.
No, me neither.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
I used to see pregnant women and feel like, you guys look like you're in pain. You look really unhappy.
It wasn't cute to me.
No.
Like, yeah, it just wasn't cute. I felt like I want to have kids. I'm just not sure how. I might get a surrogate. Honestly, you can't say to my friends, I thought birthing kids, nah, I don't want to be pregnant. They look tired. It just looks like a lot of work that I don't really want to get involved in.
You just heard from Ala and Samantha, the hosts of Shades of Black Parenting podcast. Samantha has 2 kids, a girl and a boy, and Ala has 1 little girl. As with all of our guests, I asked Samantha and Ala about what kind of ideas or expectations they had about motherhood before they began their journey. Samantha answered first.
My image of motherhood was my mum and my aunties and parents that I've seen, like, of my friends and everything. And I don't think that really prepared me for motherhood at all, because we didn't really have discussions about my mum's experience of motherhood. So all I saw was, oh God, motherhood is sacrifice. It's being stressed out. It's having to balance lots of different things. And she's a single mother as well. So I didn't really see someone who I felt was living her best life in all areas. She's a great mum, but I think I would have liked to have seen her as a mother who was being loved by somebody else, like romantically as well, and supported in that way. And I don't think we really had a discussion about what motherhood meant, really. I think that whole like pregnancy thing about thinking pregnant women look very like much like they're struggling. I thought that way until like a few months before I was pregnant the first time. So I was still kind of reconciling my beliefs. I don't know, up until like my first pregnancy. I don't think I was very prepared from my personal experiences or personal exposure, but I read a lot. I read a lot. And I really tried to examine myself as well before the pregnancy, during the pregnancy and after, to see what kind of values I thought were important for a good mum.
That's interesting. So it was kind of, not cerebral is the wrong word, because some people get caught up in the whole like, oh, the baby clothes and the names and the all of that kind of stuff. But for you, it was more about the emotional, is that fair to say, aspect of it? Yeah.
It was like very much value-based, like, I don't know about emotional, but just values, like what kinds of values do I think are important to raise a child? What kind of values do I want her to have as important in her life? Like, what kind of values am I living by? And I think those were the questions that I was really asking myself throughout the process. And it was leading me to the kinds of resources that I was finding, like books and podcasts and like websites and things, Facebook groups. So I think it, I don't know, it wasn't, I don't know, for the emotional, I don't know, but it wasn't about the kind of material things. I'm very basic. Yeah. Very, very basic.
No, that makes sense. What about you, Ala? How did you feel prepared for motherhood or pregnancy, and how did you prepare and kind of get yourself ready?
I think I was, shockingly, I felt like I was prepared for pregnancy, because I'm the type of person, I think naturally I'm the type of person, I roll with it. Do you know what I mean? I make the best of whatever it is anyway. So once I'm pregnant, I wasn't going to dwell in it or be upset. I mean, what can I do? Do you know what I mean? So I embraced my pregnancy. By God's grace, it was smooth. So I enjoyed it. And I told myself, I'm going to enjoy my pregnancy. I'm going to enjoy my pregnancy. And I kind of affirmed that. And so I did. I did. I enjoyed my pregnancy a lot. I think I just wasn't prepared for the part after pregnancy, especially that short window where your hormones are still trying to balance out. That was a mental shock to me. I don't know if anyone had warned me about that. I can't remember. But I remember shortly after I had my daughter, I didn't feel like myself. And that was a very strange period for me, just even like on a mental level. It was just very foreign. I felt very out of control of my emotions, of my thoughts. I was grateful to have family and friends around me at that time. So it was that period. No one told me, you know, people say, oh, you know, you might be a little bit crazy. You know, they make joke about you, a little bit crazy, you're a baby, and all that stuff. But I didn't realize how serious it was.
Now, if you don't hear it anywhere else, those first few days, weeks, months of postpartum life can be wild. The pregnancy books might talk about baby blues, but somehow that just doesn't cover it, because it's not just about feeling weepy or a little bit down for a few days. You can feel anything from depression to mania to anger, and it can last a lot longer than you might expect.
I feel like my window wasn't a small window. It wasn't like a few weeks or a few months. It was like a whole year. Mm. I felt like I was on the brink of rage for at least 12 months postpartum. Everything annoyed me. My tolerance level for everything was shockingly low. It was a lot. And I remember right at the beginning, I think it was day seven or day nine. And everything was like, it's not just the hormones, it's the milk coming in. And, you know, having a C-section as well, it's the constipation, it's the pain. So I think it was by day seven, my milk was coming in really well, but I was getting engorged. So I had, my breasts were hurting. Then I was constipated. I hadn't opened my bowels for like, this was probably TMI, but I hadn't opened my bowels since before I had her. So 7 days, I was full up. And then the C-section pain. So I was like, just all over in pain. I couldn't turn over in bed by myself. Couldn't really hold my baby properly. And I was like, what is this life? And I just cried. And it was the first time actually that my mum was like, because she's very stoic, like she's like very strong, like don't cry. Or she'll like tell you, okay, you've got 5 minutes to cry. And after that, we'll move on. But at this point, I think she was feeling the pain for me. Mm. She was just like, oh, it's okay. She was scared. She was scared. Mm. And nothing scared my mum. So it was just crazy. So that was like day seven, day nine, I think, where all the hormones, all the physical changes really got on top of me. And I was just really questioning, like, what have I done? Why have I done this? You know, what does this mean?
Both babies.
No, well, I think with the first one, it was the physical shock that got me. But with the second one, it was the having to pause. I think it was the social stuff that got me, having to pause my life again for, at this point, 12 months. That was a lot for me. So it was the emotional stuff on top of the physical stuff, because, yeah, that constipation is a killer. Yeah, I know that those first few weeks, I think the first time around, no one could have warned me about that. Mm. No one. It was a lot. And definitely, I was definitely on the brink of rage for at least 12 months after, wow, after having her. Yeah, I was very fragile. I think it was probably all of the above. It was the hormones. And I think even after pregnancy, we're told, oh, yeah, you know, for the first month or so, your hormones are still, you know, balancing out. Actually, it takes a bit longer than that. So I think it was hormones. It was also like you've got so many more demands on you now, you know, like breastfeeding, all those things. And I was going back to school to study full time as well. So having to manage that, being married as well, having to manage a marriage. It was just a lot of change at the same time. Even though, like, you plan for it, right? Like, you expect everything. Like, yeah, I'm going to have a baby and whatever. You have 9 months.
Yeah, exactly.
To get used to the idea. That you don't know until it happens, you know. So I think those 12 months was a real, like, adjustment. Like, growing pains, I think.
If you only had one thing to think about during that period, it would be bad enough. But like Sam said, life doesn't just stop to give you time to get yourself together. Long story short, you need help. You need a support system that can be relied on when it feels like you can't even think in a straight line.
I definitely had people around me. My mum stayed with me. So they took turns. Our parents took turns. So my mum stayed with me. I think it was for like 3 weeks. Then the other grandma stayed with me for another 3 weeks. And then they would take time whenever they could to come and stay with me, which was extremely important to me, especially considering how fragile I felt like I was mentally. And yeah, they do as they do. You know, they came on and took, oh, let me make you stew. You know, sit down, don't do this. Don't do, you know how they are. So they did that to the full, the full capacity, which was irritating at times. But on reflection, I needed it, and I would definitely need it again. So.
I wanted all the cavalry. Like, I'm always really shocked when women are like, no, it, I just want, you know, it to be me and my husband or me and my partner for the first month. And I'm like, look, I said, oh, I called, no, I don't even need to call anyone. My aunties all called me, like, when shall we come? I'm like, look, you guys better pack your bags. Pack your bags and come ASAP and bring some yam. Like,
honestly.
Like, I wanted all the help. I got a lot of help. I probably would have been even happy with, you know, some more. But my mum came to stay with us for, I think, 2 to 3 weeks. But also we had moved closer to her anyway. So she was like a 5-minute drive away. So she'd pop in and help out, like, almost on a daily basis for the first few months. And then after, when I went back to school, she actually looked after my daughter for, I think, 4 days a week anyway. Then after she, so we, I'm Igbo, and we have like a very formal tradition called Omugwo, probably pronouncing it really wrong, but I don't care. it's the sentiment that counts. I'm remembering it. It just means that after, you know, a daughter has a baby, the mother of the daughter will come and stay with her, usually for a few months, and just, you know, do all those things, cook, you know, help with the baby, that sort of thing, so that the woman can, it's like that extra added support and protection during the, I guess, like, yeah, the fourth trimester. I was lucky enough to have, like, Ola, my mother-in-law came to stay after my mum left, and so I had an added, I think, 1 or 2 weeks with her. And then when she left, my sister came to stay for a few days. And then when she left, my husband's aunt came to stay for a few days. So I was just, yeah, I was really, really blessed. But like Ola was saying, like, I don't remember anyone ever saying anything about blues or feeling down or feeling emotional. And I think Omugwo, like, the implicit, I guess, reason for doing it is to prevent against those things.
Mm.
But no one, we don't really have the language or the vocabulary to talk about emotions in that way. So the way that they show their love and their support is by just being physically present and by physically doing things, which I mean, I appreciated, but I think it would have been nice to hear, oh, you know, when, you know, I had, you know, a baby, I was feeling a bit low, or, especially for my mum, because, you know, she had all her children here and her parents died quite young. So I actually don't know what support she had when she gave birth and the first few months. I might actually just ask her as well, actually, when I next see her, because I think it's interesting to know. And it's just made me think now, like, what am I going to teach my daughter about that period, like postpartum period? And I think I would want her to know that it is hard and that traditionally and culturally we do have things in place to support us. I don't really want her to just have no idea whatsoever about what it's like, or to have like this rosy picture about what it's like either.
All three of us can testify to the immense difference it made having family and friends ready and willing to put their lives on pause to support us through those uncertain steps of early parenthood. Many of our parents and grandparents grew up in communities where this was the norm. An extended network of family and friends could be counted on to come through with food or hands ready and willing to take on housework at the very least. Not to mention there to entertain older kids, keep the new mum company, or just hold the baby while mum lies down and tries to catch up on sleep. One thing that I think about often is how modern life in big cities like London just doesn't allow for these traditions or forms of practical care to continue. I think about what might happen when it comes time for us to be grandparents, or even how we can better take care of our peers who might not have family able to help them in these ways.
Ollo and I have discussed this before about community, right?
Definitely.
And how we benefited so much from our parents' like sense of community. You know, the times when you would go and stay for like 6 weeks at your cousin's house. Yeah, and there's no issue. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like now, I don't know. I mean, my brother has three kids, three boys, and they're all like five and under. And I don't think I could handle having those three for a day, let alone 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I mean, and not even just that, like practicalities as well. We live in a flat, right? And it's a small space, and London flats tend to be quite small spaces. So that's just that practicality as well. We're all working. A lot of our parents are still working as well.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough that both my mum and my mother-in-law are now retired, but that's not the case for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot harder to try and, I guess, replicate what our parents had and what our parents did. So I completely feel you on that point. Like, the space is not easy to make, but we have to make the effort to do so, you know. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think when Ollo and I discussed it, we were talking about just, like, cooking for your friends who have had babies and just taking it round, you know, just doing the things that you know that you'd want done for yourself.
Yeah.
I think we really need to grab hold of those traditions and, like, really not let go. I think it's so important and protective.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think there's just so many beautiful traditions that are at risk. And I think similarly to what Jandela was saying, the London environment does not permit for us to really continue them. I mean, like, the employee handbook doesn't permit it.
It's right.
If someone dies, you get what? 2-3 days off.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Which is awful. Like, on a human level,
yeah.
It's awful. I'm not sure how. I think I need to give it like conscious thought. Mm-hmm. I feel like even as you're speaking, I'm like, you know, maybe I need to make a note of traditions that I've experienced and that I know of and that I've experienced so that I can consciously hand them down to my daughter. Because sometimes we want to, but we forget, we get caught up, so I can make that conscious effort. And now I think, you know, when my friends have babies, I send them gifts because that's what we do. But I can also contact Tasty or whatever, all these restaurants, send them jollof rice, send them soup so that they can put it in their freezer.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Even if I can't physically make it down there because work doesn't permit. Do you know what I mean? It's making me think. But I think that these things are so important. They're so, so vital. But like we were saying, Sam, with the way things are set up, it's so difficult to maintain. And I feel like we've adopted a lot of the British culture
yeah,
of individualism in a way. Yeah. Obviously, each to their own, but I have some of my friends that'll be like, let's say, for example, somebody passes. We now, before, our parents, for example, okay, auntie, I don't know, auntie Bookie, whatever, we are going to our house tonight. That's it. Everyone gathers around to console her. But we've adopted a culture now where it's, I don't want to be too much. So let me just pop her a text. Hey, I just want to send my, which I totally understand. But I feel like there's so many beautiful things. I think, like what you said, Sam, we have to protect, man. I think it's really, really important.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, so depending on your culture, when you become a mother, you might get a new name. In Yoruba culture, it's Mama or Iya plus the name of your firstborn child. And I say this partly as a joke, but partly being deadly serious. Look, I know the whole thing about being addressed as so-and-so's mummy at playgroup or when going to pick up your kid from school is annoying or irritating or even depressing to some mums. But for me personally, I saw this new name, whether it was the Yoruba version or the English one, as a symbol of this new version of me. I've said it before and I'll say it again. People do say that at childbirth, it's actually two people that are born, the baby and the new mother. So for me, this fourth trimester was about learning how to wear this new version of myself, getting used to my new body, my new outlook, my new feelings and desires. I asked Samantha and Ala about how their transitional period went.
It was definitely a process. And I think part of that whole 12 months of rage was me also just coming into that sense of, now that I have a child, like, none of the basic, banal stuff matters. Do you know what I mean? I've got more important things to think about. So as a student, I was going to like hospitals for my placements and things, and some of the senior doctors can be really bullies, like they can be real bullies. And before having my daughter, I was very timid, very polite. After having my daughter, I got into arguments with big bosses. Like, I'm like, my breasts are leaking, yeah? and I've got a baby I need to go and collect. I've been up since like 2 a.m. I have not got time for this nonsense. Yeah. So I think I became a lot more assertive and a lot more determined. I think I was stronger. I was definitely stronger out of it. And my perspective really changed. So the way that I approach things now is completely different to how I approach things before having children.
I think that I'm still finding my feet with it because the goalposts, if you like, it keeps changing because she continues to grow. So there's like a new phase I've got to kind of figure out and a new phase. And then she's moved along and she's moved along.
Yeah,
I think I'm still finding it. It's not always what I want it to look like or what I've imagined in my head. So I'm always trying to remember to be kind to myself. Mm. As you always say, Sam, I'm always trying to remember to kind of be kind to myself. I think it's a journey that I will continue to be on for as long as she continues to grow. So it's just like a never-ending journey, really. And I think it's just about adapting and weaving my way through to the best that I can. So if I know that I'm doing that to the best of my ability, then that's enough. I think when you speak to enough mothers, maybe, or enough women, you realize that nobody's really got it together. Nobody's perfect. Do you know what I mean? People on Instagram pretending.
Yeah.
it's not real. Do you know what I mean? And it's so easy to get carried away and believe. Everyone wants to put their best foot forward, right? Yeah. And it's so easy to get carried away. Like, I'll have mums that will maybe sometimes say to me, if, let's say, I go see my mum, or I mean, a friend with her daughter, and, you know, she might be like, oh, yeah, you know, you can see that she's indirectly explaining why her daughter's hair is messy. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, okay. Like, I know that, no, I don't care how much people try to pretend. I know that we're all trying to figure it out. And yeah, that's all. I just think when we're all trying to figure it out, I think it's important to figure out your own identity in your journey, which can take time to do, which can change. Like for me, I never really realized how lost I became in my titles until I reflected on it.
Yeah.
And it's when I started doing things that were independent of, say, being a wife and a mom, and doing things that fed me as an individual, as Ola, not as Mama Shade, that I don't know, I just became more sure of myself. So I didn't become too phased in this picture perfect. I would take things from certain women that I thought could work for me, but I tried my best to not let it tell me that what I was doing is rubbish or not enough.
I think, Ola, like, something that I've always admired about you is that you have always tried to remember Ola. Do you know what I mean? In the midst of it all, in the midst of all the craziness, the busyness, the pressures, you've always tried to remember Ola as the woman, you know? And I've always admired that. Because I think if you're nurturing, you know, who you are as a person, then there's no other option but your child to also flourish. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the time, even for like me, most definitely, it's very easy to get lost in the titles, and then you become very, very dissatisfied later on.
Yeah.
In my case, quite resentful actually as well. Yeah. At times. So yeah, I think that's a key thing that you've mentioned about, like, making sure you're nurturing yourself and remembering yourself and being kind to yourself in the process. Fine. Yeah, because the kids will be fine. You know, if you're okay, the kids will be more than fine.
They will be fine. You
know, meanwhile, you'll be looking haggard. The kids will be fine. I think I have to, like, constantly remind myself. I don't really get too fazed by other people's children. No, I know that's a lie. When I see, like, I have a friend who's 3-year-old is doing like multiplication and
good for them.
Fractions. That at my big age, I cannot even do. but seriously, in general, I don't really get fazed by other people's children or like their parenting journeys. I'd like to draw the positives, like draw what I can and learn from them. We're really, really blessed to have like a plethora of parents around us that are just amazing. You know, so I'm really blessed with that. I think it's the pressure you put on yourself. For me, that's the biggest thing, the biggest struggle. Yeah. And yeah, I think just being kind to yourself is the like most important thing. I remember with my mother-in-law, she's got 5 children and they're all quite close in age. And I remember just being like, I think I was struggling like with just my daughter, so just the one, the oldest one. And I was just thinking, I was like, oh, how, you know, I've just got one. How am I struggling so much? Mm-hmm. You know, my mother-in-law had 5, my mum had 4 and she was by herself, you know. And then I remember asking my mother-in-law, like, how did you do it with 5? And she was like, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. I was in Nigeria. I had house help. I had, you know, this auntie, that auntie. She was like, what you guys are doing, I couldn't do. I said, oh,
Okay.
And just put things into perspective for me. Do you know what I mean? It's a different. So what you're comparing yourself to is not even the reality.
This is it.
Even with my mum, I had an au pair. And I forgot about this woman. I was like, I remember, like, this woman used to live in our house and look after me, you know? So it's like, and that lady, Auntie Grace. I remember her, you know? But she was my au pair. Do you know what it is? It's asking for help, right? And like Ollie, you were saying about individualism in, you know, the Western kind of context, we think we should just do it all ourselves. I think our parents, like what they have been very good at is asking for help when they need it and taking advantage of the systems and structures of help that are available, you know? So having a cleaner, having house help or whatever, do you know what I mean? Like those were the things that they took advantage of as a way to be kinder to themselves.
Even in terms of like, say for example, with me being that way is because I have people around me who remind me of me. Do you know what I mean? That's why. So even I have people around me that knew me before I was married. But I remember we had a conversation and they were like, "Oh, what are you saying? This is not you." And then I said, "Is it not?" And then that caused me to reflect. Do you know what I mean? Also, one thing that Sam said before that was very, very sound, and I've kept it, is that sometimes we feel like there's certain things that we're not qualified to have. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So let's say, for example, oh, we're in a flat. So if I get a cleaner, I'm really lazy because you're supposed to have a pension. You're supposed to have a cleaner when you need a pension. But I remember when I did that, Sam. I was like, you know what? I remember Sam was talking about outsourcing help.
Yeah,
that is sound advice.
For those of us who have partners involved, even if they haven't pushed a human out of their body, early parenthood will be tough on them as well. Even if it's in different ways.
It was definitely challenging. And I think for him, he expected it to be like you see in the movies. You have a baby and we're all happy. Oh my God, perfect family. And I remember one time I was walking around miserable. I hadn't slept for ages. And he said to me, "Oh, you know, you don't look really happy."
Thanks.
And I was like, crying. I just went, like red eyes type of crying. So it took some adapting. And I think even for him, I thought, you know, he thought he was just going to have this daughter that was just going to dote on him and be obsessed. Maybe that's what he saw in the films. But she wanted breast milk and mummy had it, you know. So his friends had to kind of tell him, look, don't worry, you know, when she comes off the milk, she'll be more like daddy's girl, which she is. Like, she's obsessed with her dad. She's obsessed. But I know that there was times that he would find that really hard to console her. I remember one time he said to me, "Oh, you know what? Take your daughter. Like, take your daughter." She's crying. I couldn't stop her from crying. Yeah, and you have to obviously become a lot more intentional, you know? You can't be as spontaneous as you were. Everything has to be very planned. Yeah, it's different. It's very different. And I think even you have to evaluate your, because we wear so many hats as women, there was really a point where you have to kind of reflect and say, you know, how can I streamline this, if you like, because it becomes a lot. Yeah.
I think it changed a lot, but it was a gradual change. So I'll speak about the first time round. I think second time round, we were all a bit more like privy to, you know, the whole process. So the first time round, because I had this amugo, like where I had my mum, his mum, my sister, you know, his aunt, all coming round. So he was pretty much, I guess, like sheltered from the whole newborn phase for almost 3 months. I think he enjoyed that really, because he got to sleep and then escape off to work. But I think for us, it was probably the first time that he'd seen me really, really vulnerable and realizing that, oh my gosh, like my superwoman is not quite there right now. And I'm going to have to buck up, you know, I'm going to have to like fill in the gaps because, you know, I think it was a bit of a shock, actually. The shock for me, knowing that I actually physically, you know, mentally cannot do everything that I, you know, used to do or that I want to do. and having to rely on him more. That was very unusual for me, and even for our relationship. Like, we're very fiercely independent people. So me having to relax more and rely on him more and relinquish some control more, and him having to fill in the gaps a bit more as well, I think that was quite difficult on us. And even just like the physical things that no one really talks about, in terms of like, when do you start having sex again? Like, when do you reintroduce intimacy? That was a bit of a conflict for us as well. Because I don't think he really, but it being the first time around, I think he really understood what had happened to my organs. And it needed a bit of time to recover. You know what I mean? The second time around was all fine, but the first time was like, he's like, what's going on? You know? And I was still very fragile emotionally, let alone physically. So there were lots of things that had to really change. And we really had to stand in the gap for each other a whole lot. So second time around, actually, I think it's been better. I'm more at ease of saying, like, look, I'm tired. I'm not doing that right now. Can you please do that for me or for us? Can you take over? Yeah, it's a bit easier now, but it does take a lot of work and a lot of like very honest and very frank conversations. Just yesterday, I started a coaching, I started being a coach. I got a life coach. And one of the things that, you know, I said during the session was that I'm deserving of care, time and effort. Mm-hmm. And I can give those things to myself as well. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I had to get my mindset into, I guess, to keep our relationship strong. It does change. It really does.
Mine's a bit complicated. To give perspective, my husband was actually in prison when my first child was born. So that whole process did as a single parent. And then our second child is a nice little surprise that was conceived only towards the end of his sentence. So that kind of fourth trimester for us has only been here for like the last year or so since he's been back. So we've been through and we're still kind of in this adjustment period where when he went to prison, he had no children living at home. And he came out and he's got two.
Right.
So that has been a big adjustment, as well as the whole transition from like prison to like normal life is kind of big enough of a deal in itself. I feel like we're still in it. Like, we're still trying to work out like schedules. And obviously I've had this whole period of like 3-4 years where I've just ran the show, done everything the way that I want it done, but now we're coming back to a place that, oh, there's another adult that I need to treat like an adult and not like my third child. So yeah, we're still there in that kind of like adjustment process, and it's definitely been really challenging at times. I think that it's probably taken us to the brink on a couple of occasions, but I think also one of the hard things is that, ironically, we've been together for like over 10 years, married for 7 or 8. So when you've been together so long, like, you've seen each other through so many different changes, and then there's this whole kind of period where you've not grown together, you've grown separately, and then you kind of get together, but there's all this history. And we've literally come to it was kind of like over the last few months we're like, you know, let's just start again, let's leave all the old, whatever happened before, like, let's just start fresh and treat each other like we're in a new relationship, and we're trying to impress each other, we're trying to like woo each other, we're trying to make time for each other. Because yeah, otherwise I think you just become quite jaded and there's just like all this buildup of stuff. So yeah, we're still in that period. It's very complex, but we have made progress. So I don't know, maybe on the next series I'll give a life update as to how things have gone. But yeah, an extended fourth trimester, I would definitely say.
In and amongst all the dramas, crises, confusion and pure exhaustion of early motherhood, we still need to somehow find space for ourselves. It's often by force. So we spoke about the first time after giving birth that we left the babies with someone else and just did our own thing for our own sake.
I remember when we, I don't know, maybe one of the first times, It was 5 weeks postpartum, and I felt like I was going crazy because I used to run a lot, and I hadn't run for months. And you know, when after having the C-section, I couldn't even move, so I couldn't even roll over in bed, let alone run. So I think by 5 weeks, I was just really gagging for a run and to be alone and not have someone hanging off my breast, you know. So I didn't seek any medical advice. Don't do this at home. But I didn't seek any medical advice. And I went for my run. And I felt like all of my insides were going to fall out of my nether regions.
How long after your C-section was that?
It was 5 weeks. Yeah. Wow. So it wasn't, I say run, but what I mean was like a very like slightly fast walk. But it was enough. I was outside for about 13 minutes. And I felt invigorated. I felt amazing. Mm. You know, I felt sad that I couldn't actually run properly, but it was, I know it's just a matter of time, but just having that space, my gosh, yeah. Like, yeah, it was wonderful. That was one of the first times, I think.
Mm. I think for me, it was maybe 2 weeks after I gave birth and I went to the market. Mm. Like, I literally just walked out and said, yeah, I'm going to the market. Mum was like, oh, but you can't go, it's too early. And I just went. Yeah. I just went to the market with my sister and we walked around. Mm. Yeah, that was the first time.
Mm. Mine was quite a lot late. I think I had a lot of anxiety about leaving, even though at some points I just didn't want to be around him. I still had quite a lot of anxiety about leaving him. I remember the very first time we were in Nigeria, and I remember it was Christmas Day. And I got in the car, in my auntie's car, and I drove to like the shopping center with my cousin and my brother. Yeah, and everyone was like, why the hell are you driving in Nigeria? Like, what is wrong with you?
Do you have a wish?
And I mean, the thought definitely crossed my mind, if I die, what's going to happen to my baby?
What?
But I just remember feeling so, and I think obviously because it was in Nigeria, you know, you're back home or whatever, and you just feel the sun. I remember just feeling so free.
Mm, wow.
Like just driving in this country that I definitely should not be driving, because, and at that point I had been in like quite a long time as well. So it's like I hadn't driven for like literally 6 months, and then I'm driving in a bush. But it was a budget, so it wasn't as bad, but still. Yeah, I think that was kind of, because you know, like when you're trying to be cautious of as a mother, and you make all these calculations about the right thing to do, and I was just one time when I was like, this is probably not the right thing to do, but I'm gonna do it anyway. Because I just want to feel free. So I think that, yeah, that was probably the very first time when I probably made a decision like just purely for myself. All the calculations that you make now that you're a mom, how it's going to impact this and it was like, yeah, let's go. And when my mom found out, she was absolutely livid. But we move, as the kids say.
So I guess if you only take one thing away from today's episode, it will probably be motherhood. It's not easy. But as the saying goes, we are still out here, surviving and thriving regardless. So, of course, I had to ask Samantha and Ala about what it is that helps them to survive the harder moments.
One for me is Real Housewives of Atlanta. And you guys are laughing, but I'm being so serious. Yeah, it's been a stress reliever. It's been my wind down time. It's been quite wonderful, actually. You know, you're reality TV. In general, is one of my big helps. I would put the kids to bed, like do cleaning or whatever, and then it's my me time for half an hour.
Nice.
With Candy and Kenya and Nini.
I think it's just the mummy communities that I've had a chance to interact with, and all the fellow mums. I think that's been massive for me. I'm not sure how I would have been without it, to be completely honest with you. And I'm somebody that kind of vibes with other people and enjoys other people's energy and like-minded people. Yeah, I remember I went to my first mummy event maybe 2 months after my daughter was born. I'm still fully integrated in that group now. And yeah, all my friends are mums. I just love all the mummy communities that I've been able to interact with through social media, Sam, parenting podcasts, all the mummy stuff. Yeah, it's been amazing to me, invaluable.
And just as important are those moments where you as a parent feel like, wow, I've done something right here. I'm low-key killing it.
I felt that way this week. It was after having like a few conversations with my daughter who's five. Yeah, five-year-olds are really wild. Like they say really interesting things. Honestly, their minds are really like interesting. So we spent a lot of time together. So this whole week we've been together pretty much all day, every day. She went back to school. Apart from today, she went back to school today. And she got quite tearful and she was saying that, you know, while she's looking forward to going into year one and like, you know, going back to school and seeing her friends, she really just wants to stay at home. And the night before she couldn't sleep because she was so excited for school, and then she was excited to put on her uniform again, and then just as we got to the school gate she started crying.
Oh my god, my heart.
And it made me very like emotional, but it made me feel like, you know what, I'm so happy that her home environment and her family are such secure and safe spaces for her that she doesn't actually want to leave. Like, we don't have a big space, but she just loves being with her family that much, you know? It's just made me, you know, realize that it's not really about the material things at all. Like, I have in my head, like, I need to get her, like, we're going to have a massive house, a massive garden, all those different things. That's what I'm working towards and whatever. But it's not really about those things at all. Like, kids are, they're crazy, but they are very sensible. Do you know what I mean? Like, they know what the real important things are. So I felt like, do you know what? Like, it's been tough. I don't always feel like I'm getting it right, but she is happy, you know? Yeah. And that was like a mothering win for me.
And I would concur with that, because as a child, I grew up in a flat. There were six of us in the flat. So my four sisters, my mom and dad. But I had a very happy childhood. I loved being with my family. And I don't think a garden would have necessarily made me that much happier. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. My mom took us out to the playground. We still did whatever. But I was extreme. And when you're small, you're just, when you're, you know, you're young, you're just so happy to just be around your family. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm kind of just thinking about that from her perspective. I think for me, I don't have much moments, you know, nothing came to mind where I think I've got this. Nothing that I do anyway.
Can I tell you one that was just happened a few days ago, maybe even yesterday. So Ola posted an Instagram stories, like her stories are always hilarious. Need to follow her. Just a joker. Her daughter had hurt her foot.
Oh yes.
Her daughter, how old is Shademi again? Three.
She's three, yeah.
Her daughter had hurt her foot and she just started praying. She started praying healing over her foot. Started praying the blood of Jesus to heal her foot.
Oh my God.
And, you know, like you say, oh, you know, I don't really have these moments, but that for me is a moment. That's a girl who is brought up in a very spiritual environment who knows that she can, you know, call on God to heal her, literally for her little foot. And if you saw the video, she's praying so fervently.
And
Ola, I could just see you praying like that, you know. So I'm sorry, that's a parenting win, like, honestly, like, for a three-year-old to have that kind of connection, you know, spiritually. I think that's amazing. Oh, I think that's really awesome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and what it is I don't see it until is when someone tells me something about Shade. That's when I'm like, oh wow, okay. So the work is not in vain. Do you know what?
Yeah.
That's honestly it. It's by references. It's when people tell me. Because even I picked her up from school the other day and I spoke to Shade actually on the phone.
Oh yeah.
She lives in Belvedere, so she was telling me about schools, and she was telling me that she's preparing her daughter for school. So she's been telling her to clear her plate, put it on a tray. And I thought, that's good. My daughter doesn't start school till next year, so let me try it anyway. So I've been getting her to do that. And then in her school, her teacher the other day said to me, you know, she's so helpful. And my daughter's generally quite helpful, thank God. So she's saying she's so helpful. She wants to clear up and help. And, you know, she whispered, other kids don't do that. So I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, she said, you know, she clears a plate. She wants to help out. So it's always, I never know until I have, yeah, it's the references that are encouraging. They're encouraging, definitely.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Black Ballad Presents The Survival Guide. By now, we're 6 episodes in, so I really hope you've subscribed, rated, and reviewed us on Apple Podcasts. If this is your first time listening, don't worry, you're not too late to the party. First of all, subscribe, then go back and listen to the first 5 episodes, and then tell Apple Podcasts how much you love it. Deal? Great. This episode was written by me, Jandela Benson, and produced by Christina Moore of Don't Skip.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.